Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the western border, I suppose. Hello from Netherlands. I'm here for a few days, doing some businessy stuff, doing some tourism as well. But this time, eastern border from one of the westernmost countries in Europe. It's pretty nice here. Like, everything is super flat and negative curvature everywhere, but it feels really nice. However, just because I have taken a short trip to Netherlands, and then I'll go back to Riga, and then I'll go back to Ukraine, it's going to be fun. But just because I'm here doesn't mean I'll stop working. Because, oh boy, we have a lot of interesting news about what's going to happen and what's going on with the war. And some are stranger than others, so to speak. Now, yesterday I couldn't publish, but Mr. Lavrov, the Minister of Lies, as usual, managed to basically insult the country of Israel by stating that Hitler actually had Jewish blood and that Jews were the real Nazis. And that's just beyond bizarre, because Israel had been more or less neutral during this whole event. They tried to keep their good relations with Russia. However, now that's probably not happening. However, I was about to tell you about this news, but then Mr. Lavrov managed to do something again. They were asked to apologize by the Israeli government, which just makes sense because you basically, you know, turned an anti-Semitic meme into reality on an official level, just when you thought this couldn't get any crazier. But a Russian Ministry of Internal Affairs didn't calm down about yesterday's statements about the Jews. Oh no. Today, Maria Zakharova, spokesperson for that, gives another portion of nonsense and now is accusing the politicians of Israel that they are blowing up an informational campaign. And she now stated that obviously the Jews are Nazis since apparently Israel mercenaries, or volunteers to be more exact, Israel army veterans, are now fighting together with the Azov battalion. And she obviously, as we're used to seeing from Russian spokespeople, didn't provide any proof. However, yeah, now we got into the point where the Jews are the real Nazis. And Lavrov himself, he doubled down too. He didn't back down at all. Oh no, he also stated that, well, it is obvious that just because you're a Jew doesn't mean you can't be a Nazi. I mean, look at all these other Jewish Nazis. And then he stated that our president, Egils Levitz, who has some Jewish blood in him, yeah, he's also among the list of Nazis. So Lavrov, Minister of Lies, can't even finish offending one country when he has to switch over and start offending the second country and as many countries as humanly possible. Because, you know, if you go full crazy, you have to completely go crazy. And then he doubled down even further, because today the delegation arrived in Moscow for diplomatic talks, which has, you know, they have a planned meeting with Lavrov and other official persons. What delegation, you might ask? Well, one that obviously, I think, agrees with Mr. Lavrov. It's a Hamas delegation. Yes, an official delegation from Hamas, the terrorist organization. They've flown into Moscow, and they're in official talks. In the meantime, Media Source Project just reported that, a Russian propaganda machine is now trying to find another term, another analog for their so-called denazification. Because apparently your average Russian TV consumer, he can't understand the concept of denazification, and it's kind of too long, so they have to come up with something else. But about more important news, because we have some things. First of all, there was this accusation that Girkin, Igor Strelkov, the guy that I use as my source, could be an FSB agent and sent him there to basically, you know, he's still working for the FSB. And I believe that, yeah, he could. He could be doing that, but it doesn't really change the fact that he has info on the ground and that he's trying to pump up the war for the Russian population. But seeing from his battle reports, if his job is to like play up Russian successes and everything, then he's doing quite a bad job, because he's not giving any positive assessments of the situation. However, we have in total a bunch of news. First of all, from the start of the war up until the 1st of May, according to United Nations, in Ukraine, 3,163 civilians have died, and another 3,316 have been wounded. And obviously the number is higher, but these are just the confirmed cases. Secondly, the Russian army has restored the assault to Azovstal, the factory in Mariupol, even when, you know, the evacuation of civilians hadn't really finished. And yesterday I had an interesting conversation with a person who had made business deals in Azovstal and who knew specifically how the insides of the factory looked like and how they worked. You know, steel industry people know these kind of things. And of course, he mentioned a lot about the old 90s corruption ties and everything. But there's an important thing which really struck me, and I think it's worth mentioning here. Everyone's hiding in Azovstal, not just because it's a massive factory, no. The thing is that as it's a steel mill, they have these three main big blast furnaces, and they can't stop because otherwise you'll have massive metal slug like 28 tons of iron in each that you'll have to cut out because they'll be useless. And those parts are not bombed because Russia wants to take them over, because you can rebuild the rest of the infrastructure, but that's the groundwork, and you have to keep that going so Russians won't bomb that. And the workers know that, and the people in Mariupol hiding there know that, so that's why they hid there. And also, because during the Soviet era, because Azovstal is an old company, apparently a bomb shelter was built there. Like a real bomb shelter with water and fuel and like diesel generators and electricity and an internet. They probably have updated this with internet access, because if you think about this, Mariupol barely has any electricity, yet we get messages from Azovstal, and they can get messages out, and they have some resources. So they're not hiding there just because it's a big building and because it's easy to defend. They're hiding there because it was a fully built Soviet-era bomb shelter that was modernized. And if you think about it, it makes sense. They actually have electricity there and water and stuff. They are running short on food and meds, sure, but hey, Azovstal is probably the best place to be in because, again, Russians don't want to stop the blast furnaces, and it's an actual bomb shelter, so it actually might have generators and everything that could keep it functioning. That was interesting piece of news because, well, I have some other info, but that's going to go in a separate episode, but this detail struck me as really good. Other thing is that Russian forces have commenced with missile strikes to Lvov, Krivogradsk, Dnipropetrovsk, or Dnipro, as you call it in Ukrainian, this is from a Russian source, and Zakarpatsky. In these districts, there have been new missile strikes. Also, we have found out that on the cruiser Moscow, the big ship, apparently, basically over half of the soldiers there were not contracted soldiers, they were conscripts, which means that they were basically young, 18-year-old guys, just conscripted to the army. A source told to media agency Agentstvo that basically approximately 300 of these conscripts were in the boat when it sank. So it's a lot of loss for young kids, basically. Slovakian company, Constructo Defense, they're a military company, is now starting repairs and modernization of the Ukrainian military vehicles, which has just been stated by the Minister of Defense of Slovakia, Jaro Naď, which is pretty great. I mean, those tanks need some fixing, and upgrades will help as well. Vladimir Zelensky, however, has also stated that to fully restore Ukraine after the war, about $600 billion will be needed. This will go for infrastructure objects, apartment buildings, and businesses, restoring everything. The losses are immense because, yeah, we're talking about sanctions and having an effect on the Russian economy, but Ukrainian economy has been devastated. However, a lot of these agencies predict that it'll actually take less time for Ukraine to be restored to the pre-war levels because, well, apparently it'll get some help. And hey, if I would be a business, that would be good practice to just, you know, go to Ukraine and help them rebuild. Head of the Euro Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, had stated that another sixth packet of sanctions will happen. There will be an embargo of oil, and Sberbank, the largest Russian bank, which is basically their central bank that runs everything, the central one, will also be turned off from SWIFT. And there's going to be a lot of basically sanctions on Russian media. Pro-Russian media will also be turned off in the EU, and there's going to be a long list of personal sanctions. Australia also had turned on sanctions against 75 deputies of Gosduma, 20 ministers of the Donetsk People's Republic, 12 ministers of the Lugansk People's Republic, and also against my favorite buddy and greatest propagandist ever, Vladimir Solovyov, which is nice. Moscow, at the same time, has prohibited entry in Russia for a couple of ministers and the prime minister and also 61 other citizens of Japan. Apparently, they have taken into account the Japanese attitude towards the war and the Kuril Islands, so now a bunch of Japanese politicians will not be able to spend their vacation in Vladivostok. Oh, whatever shall they do? I would cry in their stead. Oh, wait. But yeah, also, the Czech PPF group has now also left Russia, so that harms their agriculture business, which is just, well, excellent, but that's about, you know, all the today's headlines. The most interesting part is really the change that denazification will no longer be approved of. But about the fronts, again, we have some nice news from Igor Girkin. He's my best buddy at this point. I should send him a box of chocolates, probably full with cyanide or something. He's great. So, from his news, and once again, Igor Girkin, if you're new here, is the ex-leader of the Donetsk People's Republic, the guy who led the separatist forces there, who grabbed a bunch of mercenaries and nice young men from Moscow and sent them to, you know, cause trouble in Donetsk. Currently, in the districts of Belgorod and Bryansk, basically there is no news about active military actions. Region around Kharkiv. There are fights in the northeast and southwest of the city. Attacks of the Ukrainian soldiers in these directions have been basically stalled, and there haven't been any major results. There have been some movement by the Ukrainian counterattack, but it's not as deep and efficient as it could have been. Russian soldiers also don't have anything to basically, you know, state. In total, front remains on the line, which Ukrainian army achieved about a week ago, slightly moving forwards again. In the region a bit south of Izium, this is the region where the railways are connected and the agglomeration is happening. In the last two days, Russian soldiers haven't moved anywhere. Basically, this strike through to the kind of highway Borovenko-Slavyansk, yeah, it's not even close. Even though Girkin himself stated that, well, the fights there are going to be difficult. Well, in one of my previous news episodes, I mentioned this. Fights are going to be difficult. However, well, he planned that this would be achieved by the end of last week. That did not happen. There are still fights around Krasnova Limana. And apparently, basically, this is... These battles are super heavy because, well, Russian Federation's military wants to show this to basically, you know, have some sort of a conciliatory prize, which, well, you know, in place of actual capture of all the Donetsk group of the Ukrainian armies. Liman has been surrounded by the Russian soldiers and parts of LDNR soldiers from the east and southeast, but basically, when after the Russian assault on Borivenko, the whole, you know, highway, as that's done, it was impossible to surround it fully, and the Ukrainians are going to fight for it. There is a foresty terrain around the city, and everything's starting to bloom finally, which is good because this means that Ukrainians can camouflage themselves better. They're way less visible, which threatens the Russian movements due to constant ambushes. Like I said, if the leaves are happening in the forests, then everything's going to be way, way more difficult. And at the same time, there are massive fighting there, and both sides are, as Girkin states, taking heavy casualties. All these movements basically come down to massive casualties. In the region of Severodonetsk, northern Donetsk, without any changes. Again, because this is a very fortified position, and without any real threat to their you know, to their back soldiers, you know, to the backgrounds, you call it Teal or Eisenberg, or from without threats to their behinds, the Ukrainian army, who was supposed to leave that position as their kind of their supply lines were threatened. Yeah, now that that's over and they didn't take the highway that would guarantee Russian army this success, yeah, they're fighting back hard. And there was an assault on this position by the Russian Federation and the separatist forces, but that didn't happen. There are total, the combat is still going on, and it's heavy, and again, both heavy losses and casualties from both sides. Popasnaya, village of Popasnaya. Again, no real shifts. Slow, Russians are slowly creeping forward, but very slowly, but there are massive, massive losses. This region has the heavy, like, everywhere in today's report I read that the losses are heavy, but this region is pulled out specifically because the losses there are the heaviest. Again, regions of Donetsk, Deyevka, Marinka, and Ugledar, same thing. The only difference is that that basically the city itself and the key villages surrounding it is basically guarded by the Ukrainian army, and the Russian Federation and Donetsk forces haven't even entered them. The battles are heavy, but everywhere else, if there is some movement, then here the movement's kind of, you know, utterly stopped. In Zaporozhye, there basically the assault of Donetsk separatist forces was, well, heavily beaten back, and there was a real setback for the Russian forces. There are positional fighting, but the assault failed completely, and this is tied to the fact that in the army of Donetsk right now, there's like massive conscription of people who haven't held a gun in their lives, so they tried to throw their cannon fodder at fortified Ukrainian positions, and there are massive casualties there. That's an actual failure of the Russian army. And, well, Pridnestrovye, Transnistria. And apparently there isn't any active fighting there yet. However, Igor Girkin states that there is a serious threat over there for an assault on Russian positions by both Ukrainians and Moldovans. Even though in the real world, the Transnistrian guys are probably going to do their own assault on Ukraine to maybe try to capture Odessa. However, they're very careful around these parts because there is a serious threat of Romania, Moldova getting involved into this war and, you know, overwhelming Transnistria, which still remained, by the way, as one of their Moldovan separatist republics, because they have Gagauzia, but that's a whole different story. But Transnistria is its own separate republic, kind of like Donetsk, except it exists from 1992. We had a whole lot of episodes about this one, too, and I think the best show that you, if you want to learn about Transnistria, is not from my show, but from the podcast called The Red Line, where I was a guest on that episode, mind you, and they had a great episode on this one. What's happening, though, is that the high command of Russian Federation right now is doing some serious, not as acts of, you know, not like acts of terrorism to cause fear among the population, but they have started bombing actual logistics lines in various regions. And the thing is that they're not bombing rails at this point because the Russian army is moving on railroads and their logistics are tied to the rails, but they're bombing electricity for the railroads. The problem is that just as in many places in the Soviet Union, and in Latvia as well, not all of our railroads are electricity-based. A lot of them are still diesel-powered, which means that if even the power lines next to the railroads get bombed, Kiev can send their diesel trains there and still continue doing things, which is, well, bad for Russia, I suppose, but they're just acting on orders. I don't see, in general, massive initiative by their forces. In total, basically, situation in the front in total continues to go as, well, Igor Girkin predicted, worst scenario ever. As he said a week ago, strategically, this goes in hand with the command of the Ukrainian army, who has managed to pull off another major success in their, as he states, propaganda about their kind of assault counterattack on Kharkiv, which wasn't as successful as the Ukrainian side would want you to think. However, it was a success, and, you know, there were retaken territories, which is great. Girkin states that the Ukrainian army has acquired one more week to regroup their forces, to regroup their forces, to gather strength, and to get more equipment and ammunition from the West, which would then be turned against the Russian Federation. And Igor Girkin is extremely sad about this. We, however, think that, well, basically, that's good news, because Ukraine doesn't look like it's going to fall anytime soon. Igor Girkin also mentions that, well, apparently Russian high command is learning its lessons from the war extremely slowly, so we can't really expect any major breakthroughs from the Russian side. Again, bad news for Girkin, great news for us. And this about concludes my daily news report, this time, like I said, from Amsterdam. If you are in the Netherlands or somewhere close that you can just, you know, grab a train ride, please let us know in Twitter or on our email, theeasternborder@gmail.com. We'd be glad to see you. Why not? I'll be here for a couple of days, so feel free to message me. And if you want to meet up and, I don't know, have a beer in a pub or something, let me know. I'll be more than glad to hang out with you. Also, please consider becoming our patron, patreon.com/theeasternborder, or just go to theeasternborder.lv and click the donate button there, or better yet, become a patron through there. Also, you can become a patron if you click on the little money icon on my Twitter account. My Twitter is @eastern_border. Please find us there. We like to talk and post stuff there, so it's pretty neat. Also, of course, please donate to Ukrainian military. Comebackalive.ua is my favorite and approved charity site. До свидания, товарищи. And remember, happiness is mandatory.